Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings, everyone. Thanks for joining us today on Lunch with Loud. And this is Debbie Lynn Molyneux, normally the co-pilot. But Janine is away today on coffee party business, traveling to Washington, D.C. area, where the board of directors is having their unretreat, as it's called. And so I'm holding down the fort today with Lunch with Loud. And so happy you all could join us today and talk a little bit about what seems to be a non-media event, but I am so livid and upset about what's happening in Arkansas with the pipeline oil spill and then the non-coverage, if you will, of the mainstream media. If I wasn't on Facebook, I don't think I would have ever heard about it. But thank goodness I have a friend who lives in Little Rock, Arkansas, Bud Laumer, and Bud posted it Saturday night, and I happened to see that there was an oil spill in Arkansas. A pipeline had burst, and started trying to find out more information about it. And I think it was two more days before anybody in mainstream media picked it up. And then yesterday, of course, I heard about the no-fly zone that got was declared over the spill area, which of course led me to go searching for aerial footage. And of course, I found some. In all fairness, the no-fly zone is a 5-mile radius, and it's for under 1,000 feet. So if you can fly 1,000 feet or higher, you can still fly over that area. So just to be technically accurate, that's what the no-fly zone is about. But I want to hear from you all today talking about, you know, how does this pipeline break in Arkansas? How do you think it's going to impact the Keystone XL pipeline? Is there a chance that Obama, you think, might not approve the Keystone pipeline despite everything else? How is this impacting, going to impact our energy, just conversation across the country? And, you know, what is it that you are really thinking about? And it's not a good talk show, of course, unless you all call in and give us your opinion as well. So that number is 646-929-2495. That number again, 646-929-2495. And I've got a caller on hold here from area code 641. So I'm going to open your mic. And I think that's going to be Bob calling in.
Yes, it is. How are you?
Thanks. I'm doing great today. So thanks for calling in, Bob. So what do you think about this whole mess in Arkansas, Mayflower, Arkansas?
Well, I have the same problem that everybody else should with any kind of tar sand spill. We simply don't have the technological expertise to get that particular stuff cleaned up quickly.
And so when you say that particular stuff, can you give everybody some background on what that particular stuff is?
That particular stuff is tar sands crude oil, heavy crude oil that is extremely viscous. Now, beyond that, I don't know exactly how it differs in composition, but I know what tar looks like. I can imagine what tar sands oil has to be in terms of viscousness, and I'd say, you know, it's slightly beyond molasses and honey as far as being a thick, gooey substance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the stuff that I've been reading online, and we're happy to have other people call in because I'm not the expert on this, and I did not, I mean, this
Nor
came
not.
Up so suddenly, I didn't book an expert guest on this today. I was unable to find one. In fact, Janine and I were planning on doing the show today. I just got so hopping mad, I was like, I'm doing the show anyway.
Okay.
But from what I understand, the little bit I've read on the internet so far, it talks about this. This actually isn't even considered oil. There's some disclaimer that this isn't even refined enough to be considered oil yet, and it is heavy and it's sinking. And so what has gotten out and is in the waterways, they're not even able to capture it so much in those nets. You know, if you've looked at any of the aerial footage, and I posted some on Join the Coffee Party last night. You know, they put out these big catcher nets, if you will, that's lay on the surface to keep things from getting into more waterways. But
right.
And then they have to absorb it. So,
well, see, this kind of thing happened in Kalamazoo, Michigan, too.
Mm-hmm.
And,
how long ago?
And I think it was 2 years ago, and they still haven't got it cleaned up.
Right.
Okay. Now, as far as today's topic, whether the spill in Arkansas will change anything in the Keystone XL debate, I don't think it's going to change the nature of the debate. It might change whether or not it eventually it might change the timetable on passage. Because I think that the moment we get the technology to be able to deal with spills like this, nobody's going to have a problem with the money we would make as a nation using our nation as a conduit. But if it's going to threaten aquifers that feed the entire nation, the way it's threatening the water supply. Yeah, the water supply in Michigan and in Arkansas, that's a whole different ball of wax.
Right. Yeah, well, I mean, it just creates a lot of fear, obviously, with people right now because we have to have water to drink. And, you know, I made a comment last night on the Join the Coffee Party post when I posted the aerial footage, too, about, you know, if TransCanada wants to build their Keystone Pipeline, you know, to transfer oil, it's like build it across Canada. And somebody else called me out for being so ethnocentric and saying, you know, well, we need to protect Canada, too. And they are, of course, right. And I really just want us to get off this fossil fuel kick. And really start developing the alternate energies.
Well, see, that's where I support the president's energy policy. We have to go with an all of the above, okay? Just look around you, okay? All you got to do is sweep the room you're in. Count the number of products made of plastic and realize that oil creates every single one of those.
Absolutely.
Okay. So getting rid of fossil fuels is not going to do anything other than create additional problems. What we need to do is take a look at the usage of fossil fuel versus the alternatives to those uses without shutting down the oil industry, without shutting down the solar industry, without shutting down name it and claim it as an energy source. I mean, wind, solar, oil, and hydro, and nuclear cannot be and should not be mutually exclusive.
Because they all have valid uses. Of course they do. But they now... You know, one of the things I know we had this conversation, through Facebook message about the plastics, and I think I had sent you that Facebook link from the TED Talk because one of the other challenges of plastics is not just what we have in our house, but what happens to it after it leaves our house,
uh-huh.
And it ends up in the ocean. It ends up in this big, you know, there's actually five big gyres in the oceans that are collecting our plastics, and it is creating enormous problems of ocean pollution. By the way,
well,
Neil, I see your hand up, and I'll get to you here in just a minute. We've got another caller, Bob.
One suggestion on the plastics problem is to build more recycling centers. And if you want to find out how that can be done, all you got to do is call Pierce College in Woodland Hills, California. And they can tell you all about that process because I attended Pierce when that was first starting to be built.
And at Woodland Hills, the one that's up by Sacramento.
No. The one
down
in
by
San Fernando. Yeah, San Fernando Valley,
LA.
California.
Okay.
Yeah, LA Pierce College. It's a community college in the San Fernando Valley.
So we have tons of, I mean, there's tons of recycling programs and getting people to use them. I mean, I still cringe every time I visit my mother in Colorado and she throws out glass.
Well, yeah, some people never get out of the habit, you know.
Especially if they've never lived
in an area where recycling was mandatory.
Correct. And, I mean, she lives in an area where they pay her to recycle aluminum, but if she wants to recycle glass, she has to pay extra for it, so she refuses.
Right.
And it's just, it's, so there's, so anyway, but let's get back on topic here because I've got, I want to bring in Neil. I think it's Neil from Fort Lauderdale. Neil, I'm opening your mic now. Welcome
Hi.
To Lunch with Loudon.
How you doing? It's amazing
I'm
you know
great.
It's me.
I have this secret list of phone numbers.
Uh-oh.
And so you're talking with Debbie Lynn. I've got Bob, your mic is still open today, too.
Okay.
So welcome to the show. What do you, Neil, have to add?
I'm very suspicious about this whole thing. I mean, they're basically not allowing flyovers over it. There's been a media blackout. I'm almost getting to the point when I'm believing that this might be almost like corporate sabotage, that this is what they're trying to do, maybe to privatize something, because it's not safe. It's basically, it's going to be happening more and more. And then what are they going to do? They're going to tell people they have to move. They have to, you know, leave their communities because it's become too toxic. Like, it just seems to be happening by design.
So tell me the benefit to the corporation for having people move out of their communities.
They would just basically be able to do whatever they want. They can close everything off and just do whatever industrial thing they want. If they're getting people out of there, they could do any form of mischief, and they can basically just close everything off and create their own little cities of industrial secrecy. That's just my feeling. I mean, I know it may be a little out there, but the thing is, I don't really trust what's going on. And when you're having a blackout like this thing going on and not allowing flyovers, there's something insidious going on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well,
you know,
which was my first thought, too. And that's, you know, why I opened the show and said, now, to be honest with you, the flyovers, if you fly above 1,000 feet, you can still fly over. They are looking to keep people from flying under 1,000 feet. And I'm sure we've got cameras good enough to, you know, 1,000 feet's nothing.
No, but it just seems that this is all about money always, and this oil that they're talking about is being sent overseas. It's not for us. We can go into whole detail about why we're paying over $3.50 for a gallon of gas. I just feel there's a lot more insidious intentions that's going on that's not really being covered by the media. I hope I'm wrong.
I'm reminded of the, you know, I don't know if anybody else on the call has heard about these cities in China that have been built that are all empty.
Mm-hmm.
Has anybody else, you know, and I'm kind of, you know, so when the minute that you said, you know, we're going to have these, you know, corporations take over these areas and have people move out, I'm thinking, well, where would they go? And then I kind of remembered all of the empty cities in China. I'm like, you know, and, you know, and how we move the Native Americans around and put them on reservations. And I'm thinking, well, you know, there are all those empty cities in China.
Well, it's not only that. There are like, I don't know how many per se, but there are buildings, endless amounts of buildings that are empty in this country that could be for our own homeless or for people who need a place to live.
Yeah.
There's a lot of things that are going on. I mean, there's always these distractions. It's either gay marriage or it's abortion or it's something else that's basically trying to sidetrack us from the fact that there is no jobs, there is no infrastructure spending, and all these oil spills are happening and you know, you don't really hear as much, and we keep on being told that it's safe and it's going to create jobs, but really what it's doing is destroying our country from within.
Well, there, talk about creating jobs. There was an interesting in the thread last night. Again, I posted an aerial footage thread on Join the Coffee Party Movement last night. And in the thread, in the comment thread that followed below, you know, there was somebody who was posting that, you know, initially there was a promise of 100,000 jobs. And then they started, you know, marking it down, of course, as it always happens. And then somebody posted in there that the pipes that they're actually using to build part of the Keystone Pipe in Texas and Oklahoma already are actually being built in India. And then for installation, they're actually bringing workers from that company over to do the installation. And I didn't know if it's unverified. This is all, you know, rumor, speculation, because I haven't verified any of that. And I just wondered if anybody else had heard that. I was like, well, we don't even get American jobs out of this.
Well, I've also heard a lot about not only that, but I've heard a lot of eminent domain going on too.
Well, that always happens, yeah. Well, I just want to remind everybody, you know, we can take the conversation where we want to go. So, you know, this is radio for coffee party and for everybody who's interested in this topic. But I did kind of seed the conversation to say, you know, how can we get this Arkansas pipeline break? You know, is it going to impact the Keystone conversation or not? You know, is there a way, you know, I'm assuming most people who are listening are opposing the Keystone pipeline. And if so, can we get the president, who looks like he's going to approve it, to change his mind to not approve it? Is it too late?
It's the same guy that signed the Monsanto rider. I don't know. I've lost a little faith in him now.
No, yeah. Well, in the NDAA, you know, in lawful detention
too.
As well.
I mean, I know it's getting off topic, but I mean, I am definitely a progressive, but he's disappointed me in certain ways. And my feeling is that it's not that we've lost control. I don't know if we can ever get it back. I mean, corporate money is controlling everything, and it's just our needs and our wants are being ignored completely.
Mm-hmm.
American people do not want a chance of a pipe rupturing and destroying ecosystems and wildlife and food and communities, they're not building this for safety, and they're violating every economic standard because they can get around the EPA because they pay off the right people. And it's just, it's gotten to the point where I, as an American, I'm become extremely cynical about, I always was cynical about my leaders. Now I think they're more insidious than anything else now. And it doesn't matter if they're Democrats or Republicans. I think they're all insidious. They're all paid off.
Okay. So no hope from you, Neil. I'm going to bring in another caller. Do you want to stay on the line with us, or do you want to?
Well, I hope. Yeah, I'll stay on the line. I have no problem.
Okay. All right. I'm going to leave your mic open.
Okay.
And 773, I don't have your name yet on my secret list. Who are you, and where are you calling from?
Hi, my name is Laura. I'm in Chicago.
Hi, Laura. Have you called in before?
No. I don't think so.
Well, thank you for calling into Lunch with Bob. This is Debbie Wayne.
All right, so do you want to hear my question? I'm actually trying to find
the
exact name of something to refer to, and I'm sorry. Okay, so my question is, I'm actually wanting to acquire some information to write a story possibly for Elephant Journal. I've just started writing for their green page. And I'm looking to find out exactly who is going to pay for the cleanup in Arkansas. Because I keep seeing the articles saying that Exxon, because of this loophole in this 1980 law, does not need to, because it's crude, butamine, not, you know, another kind of oil, that they didn't need to pay into this fund, this cleanup fund. Sorry. Allergies in Chicago today. So then my question is, well, then who is paying? And I was assuming the taxpayer. Well, I contacted someone I know at the EPA, and she said, no, the taxpayers do not pay. The companies do pay. And I said, well, then are they making up for not paying into this fund? I'm just confused. Do you know anything?
Well, you know, Exxon actually had a lot of press yesterday saying that they were going to pay for it. Because when I looked at the, and this is all just from their, you know, their public relations people yesterday, they were saying they were not going to pay, or they did not have to pay because they didn't pay into that fund that was the cleanup fund, kind of their insurance policy, if you will. But then they released statements yesterday saying, but they would pay.
Okay. And then the question is, what will they end up paying for? Because there are all these external costs, you know, businesses who have lost business, and that'll be, you know, down the road. And as this EPA staff person pointed out, they're still dealing with the Michigan spill, you know, that was larger.
Well, and then is BP paying everything that they need to pay for the Gulf?
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, and Bob, just so you know, Bob, who's over in our chat room now, said that ExxonMobil did get sued over the Exxon Valdez spill and did end up paying for that. And I wish that we had J.D. Messenger on with us again. He was a guest that we had on 2 weeks ago, and he was actually the vice president in charge of the Valdez spill cleanup.
Mm-hmm. I saw that you had him on. Okay.
Yeah. So we didn't get to talk about that part of the financial arrangements from the Valdez spill cleanup, but I know that he would be a vast wealth of knowledge right now.
And did they name an expected amount that they think the cleanup will cost?
Oh, I don't think it, for Arkansas. I don't think they have a clue yet.
Yeah. Exactly.
I don't think they know yet. So I don't know if that helps you or not, Laura, but you know, the press yesterday, what I was amazed about yesterday was just that, first of all, that the pipeline had broken on Friday or Saturday night.
Right.
It took them, you know, until Monday before any of the mainstream media started reporting on it. And then by yesterday on Wednesday, instead of reporting about the no-fly zone, they were actually reporting about, oh, no, Exxon's going to pay for everything. It's all okay.
Oh, sure.
You know, it was just like, oh, God. My stomach was turning.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm sure you were talking about the media coverage. What have you determined? What is your take on the media coverage? I mean, it's never adequate, but.
Well, I think that ExxonMobil pays for a lot of advertising in a lot of places.
Yeah.
You know. Having worked at a newspaper before, you know, they don't generally do a lot of hard reporting on their big advertisers.
Right. And so they've done their damage control, and now the media will walk away and say, okay.
Pretty much.
Right. Yeah.
That's why, you know, I'm hoping that we get some callers in from Arkansas today to can actually tell us, you know, what's going on in Arkansas. What do they know? So, my friend that lives in Little Rock was really – quite concerned about the water issue, because it was his water supply that could be impacted.
Do you know about that organization that's dealing with the animals there, Hawk?
I don't. What do you know about
them? I saw them online, and this is, of course, me being very much an animal lover. This is what got me, you know, even more over the top. Of course, the photos of the ducks with the oil dripping from them, and their eyes tearing. So I can send you a link to them, and I bet someone from
sure.
them would love to be on.
Laura, are you near a computer, or can you? If you can get into our chat room by going to blogtalkradio.com/coffeeparty and clicking on the link.
Yeah,
cool.
I have it open.
So if you can go into the chat room, you can type it, just paste it right into the chat room.
Oh, okay. Cool. I'll do that.
That would be great. I appreciate that.
All right. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Oh, thanks, Laura, for calling in. I appreciate that. And I need a new caller now, because Neil dropped off. He had to go. And Neil, appreciate you being with us. Anybody else want to call in? Feel free, 646-929-2495. We're talking about the pipeline breaking in Arkansas and having the oil spill. And weren't those images just stunning? With the neighborhood, and the oil running down the street of that one neighborhood. It looked like the pipeline broke in somebody's backyard. I don't think that the Keystone people were expecting something that vivid. That to me was just a really interesting imagery to show, you know, and the image, of course, that I used of the guy with the suitcase as he was evacuating his house. Yeah, so it was... It was really interesting for me, some of the images that were coming out of that. So anybody else has something to add here? Because I could go a little bit deeper into what we're finding out about Arkansas and the water. But I really want to talk, too, about Keystone and actions that we could take. Does anybody have actions that they're talking about? You know, 2 weeks ago we were talking about being willing to get arrested to try and stop the Keystone, and if that would do any good. We came up with the idea of rewriting the Declaration of Independence to list, you know, the grievances against our government right now, and I know JD is still working on that. So looking for a caller, 646-929-2495. Giving people time to dial the number. So I'm going to go out here to Facebook and see what kind of of comments that we have going out on the Facebook page from last night, because there were some really interesting things in the thread. And it looks like some people are kind of happy with the MSNBC coverage, and which I haven't seen. I actually don't have cable, so I look at the websites to see what's been going on there. And so, anybody have anything to add? I hate talking to myself, you guys. Come on, 646-929-2495. And got some people, Facebook, people are getting their news from Facebook and NPR. And, oh, I love it when we get the conspiracy theorists out here, too. Deformed fish are being reported downstream already. I think it's been 4 or 5 days. Yeah, a lot of people are reporting here that they heard first about it on Facebook, and then we're finding out about it later on through the mainstream media. There was actually a report last night on the Weather Channel, which was quite interesting, on weather.com. I'll find that link and repost it. It looks like we have a caller from 847. I'm going to open up your mic now, and welcome to Lunch with Loudon.
Hi.
Hi there.
I don't want to get off topic, but it is, I believe, on the topic about, you know, the whole Keystone thing. And that is, I thought you were starting with, you know, the civil disobedience and thing. My thing I think that's being missed is, aren't there just a huge number of lawsuits already in Texas by landowners against Keystone, where landowners, you know, American landowners, are having their land basically taken, declared almost under, they make an offer to the landowner.
Mm-hmm. Under eminent domain, is this what Neil was talking about?
Where the landowner rejects it, and then they take them to court, and the courts just say, "Not too bad, so sad. Now we're going to
take
it
anyway."
Home. Exactly, yeah. And it's a Canadian company, so they use our legal system.
Yeah, they use
our legal system to take an American taxpayer's land to promote, their own agenda. I mean, how insane is that?
So it's not even, they're not even doing it for, I mean, usually eminent domain is used for the purpose of taking something into public land.
Exactly.
But what you're saying here is that they're using eminent domain that right now for a private company project.
Exactly.
Oh, my God. I didn't get your name when I opened your mic.
Yeah, sure. My name is Kim, K-I-M. I live in Northern Illinois. I am a member of the coffee party.
Well, I appreciate you calling in. And so I've actually heard of eminent domain being used this way for usually for private development projects, like in inner city areas.
Well, and, sure. I mean, if they want to make a loop on an expressway, they'll come in and say we're going to knock down whatever 20 houses, and we're all familiar with those kind of things, but I've never heard of
them selling then the land to a national, an out of country company, or probably a global company at this point.
Well, I was aware of this, I'm going to say 2-3 months ago, where I was reading news, the news. I mean, on first I saw it on MSNBC, and then I, read the articles, and I was surprised that it wasn't made a bigger issue in the national media. And the landowners have now gotten to the point where enough of them were affected that they, of course, they were having trouble as individuals trying to defend themselves. So they were making a class action almost against you know, the Keystone owners, and
mm-hmm.
I'm just surprised that it hasn't gotten more attention, because it's insanity, I think.
Well, I mean, well, this is interesting, and this is how things get started. I mean, we can definitely, as part of Be the Media with Coffee Party, start getting these things out there to get more attention, so that mainstream media has to pick it up, if you
yeah.
will.
Well, again, it's I don't know, a 60s baby boomer, whatever you would like to, you know, terminology you'd like to use, and I think that they're, I can understand, you know, the concept of, oh, civil disobedience and getting out there and sitting down and getting arrested.
Yeah.
But I also, you know, I mean, again, you know, I grew up here in Chicago, you know, in the 60s and Daley and the whole thing. But
yeah.
I think there's a better way to get the message out there that, look, this is really and truly anti-American. It's anti-American to have a private citizen's land glommed up by a foreign company for something which not one single American is going to see a drop of oil in their gas tank or their home heating oil, and it's all going to be sold on the international market, most likely
mm-hmm.
to China. I mean, that's mind-boggling.
So one of the things that we talked about, you know, just a couple of weeks ago, just to, remind everybody again, is that, you know, we really talked about, you know, getting back to our core values, if you will, as a country, and kind of like a return to what is kind of the meta issue, because we're talking here about specifically about Arkansas and the Keystone pipelines.
Right,
but
and the spill and everything, yeah.
And the spill and, you know, and everything. And can we shift that narrative on, you know, Keystone is a done deal and there's nothing you can do about it. And I like what Bob had to say earlier about, you know, we probably, Arkansas may delay the Keystone pipeline, but it's unlikely to actually stop it. You know, so there may be enough uproar over Arkansas right now that it has to delay the project. The Keystone project. Assuming that it
gets
out.
Do you believe that? Do you believe that yourself?
I don't know. I'm just looking for possibilities because I know I don't want the Keystone project to cut across our country. I don't think it's the right direction.
Absolutely, I don't agree with it because, again, of the idea that American landowners, taxpayers, are having
benefit.
Their land basically taken from them for something that has no intrinsic payback for the citizens of the country.
Right.
And so it's all about big business conglomerates forcing that upon us. And it's all
right. To put it bluntly, Kim, it's the whole project is about raping the earth to get the tar sands oil out in Canada. And then pulling it across the U.S. at great environmental risk and to our watershed and then to the neighborhoods like this that we're talking about in Arkansas so that they can ship it to China or wherever to make huge profits at the expense of not just humanity, but to the expense of the earth.
Oh, yes. And then the other part of that is that
it's just not worth it.
The end all be all of that is the byproduct of the refining of that product, the waste, you know, if you will,
mm-hmm.
Is left here in the United States.
Right.
You know, who ends up with that? Texas does.
Yeah.
And then,
so the extraction process is bad. The delivery method is bad. It's all because we think we need oil for energy. And so just when I look at the whole systems, you know, and I'm into something called whole systems design. When I look at the whole systems, it's for the sake of money and it's for
absolutely.
The sake of oil
absolutely.
Consumption
yep.
because we think we need that type of energy. And the only part of that system that I have control over is how much oil energy I consume. From the plastics that Bob was referring to earlier to the amount of gasoline I put in my car.
Right. Well, yeah. Again, what, you know, what makes me nuts is that there is no upside for any U.S. citizen to the entire deal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if there was a deal struck in any of this legislation where, let's say, 50% of the end product was available to American consumers in the form of gasoline or, again, home heating oil or something, then,
mm-hmm.
you know, then they might have a leg to stand on. But the idea that not one drop of it's going to stay here and it's all going to be shipped overseas, it is they don't have a leg to stand on to make it
yeah.
happen.
They have said that it's all supposed to be for American consumption. I've heard that argument.
Pardon me? They
and
said what?
I've heard the argument that it's all supposed to be for American consumption and not to be exported, just so you know. I don't believe
it. I've never heard that. Everything I've read and seen, never heard that.
So I will, if I can find the link while I'm hosting the show, I'll put it on in the chat room. If I can't, I'll put it on our Facebook page so y'all can find it.
Oh, I'd love to see that. Yeah, I'd love to see that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And,
I just wanted to chime in on this. And, again, I don't know about sitting down in front of bulldozers and going that route at this point. I can see, again, where civil disobedience has its place in certain situations. But I hate the idea that we as citizens, all of us, have lost our voice so badly. And I'd like to throw a lot of it back in Obama's lap. He should, you know, get up there at the podium and say, look, folks, this is the end game of the Keystone thing, and go A, B, C, D, E of what the citizens of the United States are not going to get out of the deal.
Mm-hmm.
And the other part of the thing that's going on in Texas that they were talking about is that, no, there are no jobs created because Keystone brings its own construction crews down from Canada with
right.
them.
Right.
So, no, they're not employing anybody either. You know, it's every argument that they bring up about, oh, no, we're going to employ all these people, we're going to do this, we're going to do that, it's all a fallacy. It's just...
I know. It's like they're trying to... It feels like the big con to me. The whole thing feels
Thank
like
you
the
so
big
much.
Con.
That's a great word. Yeah, it is a great word.
The big con, and I just am not buying it. So, I so appreciate you calling in, Kim. I'm gonna put the phone number out here for other folks to call in,
well,
too, and
yeah,
join
I'm
the
done.
Conversation.
I'm done. I just couldn't let it go by without putting my 2 cents worth in. Very nice to talk to you. Thank you for taking my call.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Kim. Take care.
Bye.
646-929-2495 is the number. Come join the conversation. Express your frustration. Tell us if you think it's a big con. Tell us if you think it's not a big con, if you really think we're going to get some benefit out of Keystone. How do you think Arkansas, the pipeline break in Arkansas, could affect the narrative? What can we do? These are the questions that I have for you. I'd love to hear from you right now. 646-929-2495. Got about 20 minutes left to the show today, and I'd rather not talk to myself. So would love to hear from you. I'm going to jump back over to the Facebook page here for a second, because we have some funny comments that are coming in here. And Tom on Facebook page says he's extremely upset that the FAA has banned, he says they banned air traffic over the spill site. He was a social media manager during the Enbridge spill, and I can report that Enbridge, which is a Canadian country, was treated fairly by the EPA and PHMSA, and is still paying for the cleanup. BP was ordered to pay restitution, fined, and some criminal charges were filed, yet Exxon, the American company, seems to be treated differently. Why is the media not reporting this story? Why is Exxon allowed to restrict media access to the spill site? His answer, the Exxon has learned after Valdez that it pays to buy politicians. Oh, God, I wish JD was here to talk about this a little bit more, because he really had some insights from the Exxon side of the story here. So 646-929-2495 is our number. Would love to hear from you. And over in the chat room, John is commenting that, yes, just to be clear, eminent domain has been used to take private land and give it to private parties for development. For example, Kelo versus the City of New London, Connecticut, does not have to be for public use, only for the public interest. So, John, thanks for that, for adding that into our chat room. And, yes, John, we were acknowledging that that is, we were aware of that, but we weren't aware of the eminent domain being used to actually sell the land to a global international company. So the Keystone Pipeline, but using eminent domain for the Keystone Pipeline, selling it to a Canadian company, we thought was pretty damned ballsy, if you will, use of eminent domain. So I am definitely not for that one. So who else is out there that wants to chime in on this today? I'm really interested in how could this Arkansas spill change the Keystone narrative, if at all. And if it doesn't, it doesn't. But boy, I would sure like it to. I'm looking for hope today so I can keep my rose-colored glasses on. I like wearing those. Sorry, I'm reading some more Facebook. And Chris on Facebook is saying, been hearing scattered reports about it since Saturday night, which is when I first heard of it. If I was a news agency, I'd be all over them asking why they won't allow access to the scene, whether by foot, vehicle, or air. And then somebody else said that there is some local Arkansas media coverage of it, but she did not post a link. Gosh darn it. So we're getting things all over saying that there is local coverage, there's not any national coverage, and some rumors as to what and why. So tell me, what do you guys want to talk about today? What else would you like to talk about? If we have finished airing out our grievances on Arkansas and on the Keystone Pipeline today, then maybe we should end the show early and get on about our day. Any last comments from anybody? 646-929-2495. Would love to talk to you. All right, just a reminder, everybody, that we Coffee Party Radio is completely membership funded, and we are funded by members like you, like me. I do a $5 a month gift. Janine's does a little bit more than that. And you can find links to that at coffeepartyusa.com. There's a big red button on the right-hand side. If you would help us, that would be great. Oh, it looks like I've got a caller in. I'm going to open up your mic. Laura,
hi.
Is it you again?
Yes, it is. Do you mind that I'm coming back just with another thought, but more along the lines of the questions you're asking?
Sure.
I went to the Forward on Climate rally in Washington, D.C., so I'm very obviously interested in this, in the Keystone issue. So I guess I want to combine two thoughts. So one thing that came across very clearly to me during the rally and from the speakers is that I went to the rally because I'm interested in the climate change in general. And I frankly didn't even know how much it was going to be focused on Keystone. So then I came away very much, advocate against, or trying to work for getting Obama to, turn down the pipeline. But they made it clear in this rally that they are making this the seminal issue. Like, this, to me, is the turning point. So my question, I don't really have an answer. My question is, if the major environmental movements, like, or organizations like Sierra Club, 350.org, those, and we heard from some Canadian organizations and First Nation people, they're making this the issue where they're saying, this is it for you, Obama. What are we going to do as an organized people, mobilized people? I think we've gotten very mobilized over this. Of course, we can be a lot more. But what are we going to do if he, he signs it, right? So I'm looking for those types of plans, too. I mean, I understand right now we have to do everything we can to defeat. And then also an answer to your question about has the Arkansas events made a difference. I think everything ends up making a difference. I think every day that goes on, just to give you any hope, you know, every day that goes on that he doesn't make a decision, there's more of a chance something like this is going to happen. And maybe, you know, maybe he's already made the decision in his mind. But it's interesting because he could have at any point taken, well, no, he can't because the State Department is still got the public comments time still open. Okay, so he can't technically. But, you know, it'll be interesting to see when the public comments close how long he's going to take to make the decision. And I almost, what he's been saying to us, Obama's been saying very directly, I think, ever since right before the election, is you need to push me. I need to hear from you.
Right.
And really, that's something you have to do with every president, but especially this one. Now, maybe he's just saying that. So I do think every day that goes by is an opportunity for more and more people to just keep with him, the State Department, 350.org. He's got a great letter up where you can basically formulate your own letter and send it. They're looking for a million people to send it in. Of course, we know the State Department report was partially funded by oil companies. So, you know, we're always fighting against that.
TransCanada specifically.
Yeah. So my main thing I want to say, though, is what Kim was talking about is also the same thing that's happening with fracking. They're, you know, taking away people's land. And I read something so horrible the other day and so insidious that these companies can actually sign the landowner's name on their lease for the land without their permission. So they're basically
Say that again.
I hope I'm getting this right. So when a company wants to go into, you know, someone's land to do fracking, they can, to lease the land, they can, and of course this is state by state, because like here in Illinois, we're looking at some really strict regulations, so I think it does go state by state as to what the laws are. But I read that in some states, the companies wanting to use the land can sign the real landowner's name onto their lease without...
It's called forgery.
Yeah, well, without recourse. No, it's actually legal. No, it's actually legal.
Oh, they've changed the laws so that forgery is now legal.
Well,
I just...
You know, I know, right? So here's my thought. So all these ranchers, it's the people with lots of land who are you know reaping this or you know or on the bad end of this, right? So what about the ranchers, the farmers, the people with you know a lot of land? And frankly, I have no statistics or research on this, but my feeling is that a lot of them are conservative, or you
definitely.
Know at least okay.
And
this
for individual property rights.
Exactly. And what if they were mobilized into a movement? I think it would take a lot less of them to raise attention. These are the people providing our food every day. You know what I mean? These are the people we're really depending on in this country. And especially the larger, you know, the farmers with the larger amount of land. And, you know we don't have that many family farms left. So, and also I think on every front the progressives are fighting, it's going to take, unfortunately, the quote-unquote other side to be the ones to really push things over the top.
Got it. Yeah, well, this is
you know,
part of the you know what the Coffee Party does. I mean, we try and bring you know the transpartisan solution forward.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I love what you're saying about that, and I just want to bring forward something from Bob in the chat room saying that sometimes if there's a lease on the land that people don't they're leasing maybe the surface of the land, they may not be leasing all of the land. But if they own, and sometimes when you buy land, like when I bought land in California, I didn't buy the water rights or the mineral rights. And so sometimes, even when you buy the land, sometimes you don't buy everything like in the land.
So that's what might make it legal. Yeah.
that might be. So I was being really strong with my language on forgery there, but that could be. It depends on what they're purchasing, you know, what they've actually bought with the land or leased with the land.
Yeah.
And so, area code 518, I see you there. I'm going to get to you here in just a second.
Okay.
So,
but I really just want to put across this idea of organizing those people, you know, landowners who are, yeah?
Yeah, I think that's a great idea. Do you have a way to do that?
No, I have ideas every day about how to do things, and then I don't. I wish I didn't work full time. And I really do a lot of activism. But it was just an idea, frankly, I had within the last week. And I think we would need to find out. There must be some organizations already that they're part of, is my guess.
Uh-huh.
You know,
yeah.
I work for a member association, so I think, you know, a nonprofit. So I think along those lines like that. Let's take what's organized already.
Of course. Well, and you mentioned 350.org, and I just this morning had a friend of mine who met somebody, communications director over there yesterday, and he's going to introduce me. So hopefully in the
Great.
Not too distant future, we'll be introduced, you know, on at least on the show, if not something else with 350.org.
Yeah. Okay. So, yeah, if you can, I mean, do you guys have any means, I guess, with being organized to do something like that or to look into
I'm thinking about, Dan Aronson, who's another coffee party radio host. He does Monday nights, Press One for Democracy. He also works and coordinates with other advocacy groups. So we need to probably pull him into that conversation.
Mm-hmm.
To see who he knows. He's been working a lot on corporate accountability with other organizations on corporate accountability. So, and not so much because, you know, and keep in mind, you know, Coffee Party is largely about anti-corruption and getting money out of politics. And so
Right. We're
taking this little side trail right now here on environment because it is so obviously, there's so much obvious corruption here.
Right.
That it's you know, this is where it touches the Coffee Party core issue.
Oh, sure. Well, that's involved in everything in our daily lives. So
exactly.
One thought I had real quick, I thought if they organized is what if they chose one day to not send their product to market? What if one day everything came to a halt in terms of meat, dairy? Everything, and of course they'd lose money. I don't know exactly how they would work, you know, but just if something where it reaches, and especially living in an urban environment, we need more connection to our producers of our, you know, what sustains us. You know, speaking for myself, I don't feel that connection. I don't get out to the country
right.
that much. You know, we have those nicely packaged things from Costco with the little cartoon chicken on them or whatever.
I know.
No, I'm just saying, this to me, it's like, let's, you know, them being organized, them making the connection so that it is in all of our backyards. That's, if you're asking what it's going to take, I think that's what it's going to take. Everyone has to feel it and feel it on a visceral level, not just some, oh, the planet's warming, oh, big deal. You know, it's got to be, you know.
Well, Laura, I'm glad you said that because I have an idea for another show and an idea for guests on that talks about how we could actually get down to that level of sustainability easily.
Yeah.
Easily,
yeah.
Easily.
Cool.
I'm gonna click
Thank
over
you.
To Joe real quick because we just got
All right.
about 5 minutes left.
Yeah, thanks so much.
And so, Laura, thanks for calling in. I love having you on Lunch with Loudon today.
All right, thank you.
All right, thanks again, Laura. Joe, I'm opening up your mic. Are you there? You might be muted. Either that or Joe gave up on me because he's been on hold for a little while. Well, Joe, your mic's open when you get back over there to your phone. And And I just want to give a, I see Janine is listening from the road, so I just want to give her a shout out, but she texted me that there's too much road noise, so she can't jump in and say hi. So I'm going to say hi for her on her behalf to everybody as she's traveling. And Joe, if you happen to get back in here, go ahead and just give us a big shout out. Just a reminder that we do have three other Coffee Party radio shows. Starting Monday night, we have Press One for Democracy. That's at 10 p.m. Eastern Time. And Tuesday nights, we have The Middle Ground with Dan Aronson's on Monday night. That's Press One for Democracy. Tuesday night, Middle Ground with Eric Beiler and Michael Charney. That one is at 8 p.m. Eastern Time. Thursdays, of course, is us, Lunch with Lavin at noon Pacific. And then Saturdays, we have Egberto Willis. That's at 1 p.m. Eastern Time. And he talks about all of the week's events. So look forward to having you all join all of our radio shows. Joe, did I hear you come back? All right. Well, I'm going to put him back on mute. And again, Coffee Party Radio is completely supported and member-driven. So any help you can give us, go to coffeepartyusa.com. Click on the big red button that says join now or donate. There's a donate button as well if you're already a member, in which case we thank you very, very much. We cannot do this without you. You make the shows great. You make Coffee Party run so that we can pay for all this technology to make it possible. And I say have a great, great day. And thanks for joining me on Lunch with Loudon.